Welcome to the Women Who Fights podcast. We empower female fighters to take full agency over their training. Our goal is to celebrate and inspire others with the incredible action women and allies are taking to level the playing field. We talk to experts, uncover prejudice, and champion what's driving our progress.
And today we have the one and only Elizabeth Clay with us. A very few of her very recent accomplishments include gold in Nogi Worlds and Nogi Panams in both her division and the absolute category. So we're talking about a monster. She's also fighting on Polaris in a week, the biggest UK invitational grappling show that has the very first ever Women's Grand Prix. Elizabeth, you were into gymnastics from a very young age until the age of 12. What was that like, and what were your memories of that time?
So I started gymnastics. I was like, I was really little. I think like 18 months, like walking. But for me, it wasn't as competitive as my older siblings. My older siblings were elite gymnasts. So that was kind of like, I wanted to do it. They were elite gymnasts. So like, I kind of like went along with it. But with them being elite gymnasts, if you know anything about gymnastics, it's extremely expensive. So I was kind of like in it, and then I would be out, and then I would be back in it, and then I would be out, just because sometimes having four older siblings that were in it, it wasn't always affordable to have a fifth in there. But for me, just like growing up with that, I feel like that made competing in jiu-jitsu and just kind of that mindset a lot easier. Especially, I think if you know anything about jiu-jitsu, like 10 years ago, it was very much that thing of like, especially being a kid, they were like, no, you're training too much. You're doing too much. You're doing that too much. And I was like, no, it's not enough, because I grew up like, the whole point that I quit gymnastics was because I wasn't getting enough hours in. So because of that, I was like constantly like wanting more training on top of everything else. And so I think the biggest thing, like growing up with that, and like I was homeschooled, so I was always in the gym when I was little. Like I remember being in the gym, I would do my class, and then I would like go and sit and like do my schoolwork while my older siblings were like, while they were training and doing gymnastics. And then like at the end of the day, because I was like the little kid in the gym, they would let me go like play on the mat in the gym when nobody was supposed to be like playing on there. I'd be like swinging on the bars and stuff like that. So it was just like, from a young age, my whole life basically revolved around sports.
Wow. And so what did your parents do? Were they into sport to then bring all of you guys in as well?
They did sports growing up, but definitely not at that level. My mom actually did more theater when she was younger, which is kind of funny.
Wow, that's really cool. And how did you find jiu-jitsu? What was that path?
So basically I had just quit gymnastics because I wasn't getting enough hours, and in my head I was like, I'm not going to do something just to do it. That was never something that I wanted. And so I quit gymnastics, and for probably like 6 months or so, like I didn't have any sport, any anything. So I was looking for another sport to do, and I was looking at like diving, figure skating, like something more along the lines of like gymnastics. And one of my older brothers actually was like, I'm going to try MMA. And I think we all know how that goes. They say it and then they never actually try it. But because of that, like I tried jiu-jitsu and I was like, I think I did like one class and I was like, yeah, no, this is it. This is what I'm doing.
How old were you?
I was either 11 turning 12 or I just turned 12, because I started in June and that's when my birthday is. I just don't remember which side of it falls on.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And you knew at the age of 11, 12, yeah, this one.
That's amazing.
Can you tell us about your first class? Like, what was that? So you walked in and you're already clearly like a very athletic person. You've already got a background of, you know, physical awareness and all of that. What was, can you talk us through that first class?
If I can even... I remember like basic warm-ups, doing that, like the shrimps and stuff like that. And I just remember being like, this is so weird, because it's different. Mm-hmm. Even in like gymnastics, you do like more weird movements, but it's all very like everything's in a line. Everything, like there's a reason for it. Jiu-jitsu is more of like especially when you're first trying it, like it's, you're putting your body in weird positions, like stuff where it's not necessarily supposed to go and stuff like that. I definitely think like I picked it up faster than other people, but I definitely remember being like, this is just so different than anything I was used to.
I mean,
go on.
Oh, I was going to say, by the age of 16, you'd been training for 4 years or something, mm-hmm. And you're meddling in big competitions like Worlds, yeah. Pans, ADCC trials, and you're a blue belt. What was that progression like? So you walked in, you were like, this is the sport for me. Did you go from 0 to 100%? Did you start training full time? And how, you sort of mentioned that the mindset lent itself quite nicely to jiu-jitsu, but can you talk us through that mindset as well?
Yeah, so right away I started training 5 days a week, and actually one of those days my mom wouldn't take me in, so she would only take me in 4 days a week because we actually lived a little bit outside of the city and have older siblings. You know, I'm one of eight and I'm the middle.
Oh
yeah, and gosh. I'm the middle, so I have four older siblings.
When you said you had four, I was like, oh, she's got to be the youngest.
No, I'm the middle. I have three younger brothers.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So my older siblings, obviously, at this point, like, they're in college. And so for me to be able to train that fifth day that week, which I think, if I remember right, was a Tuesday. Like, my mom would go in Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I could train those days, but I couldn't train on Tuesdays, except my older siblings went in. So being homeschooled, like, I just had to have my school with me. So I would go in at, like, 8 in the morning, take my school with me, do my school, hang out at a college at like 12, 13, hang out at a college, do my school. And then I would walk. It was probably like only like a mile. And then I would go walk. And this is at night. So it wasn't until class wasn't until probably like four or five. I don't even remember. 4 or 5. And I would hang out at the college until then. And then I would walk to go train to be able to get that fifth day in. To then ride back with my siblings when I was done to go back home.
Wow.
Amazing. And did your siblings try it when they were picking you up? Were they like, oh, this is cool? Did any of them train?
So for my older siblings, one of my brothers trained for a little bit, one of my older brothers, but he didn't train. He trained maybe for a year or so, not very long. And then like for a little bit, he tried to get back into it, but it's that classic kind of thing of like, you know, he's training, gets a girlfriend, quits training. They break up, he comes back to train, gets another girlfriend, could like the thing you see all the time. So it was kind of that. My older sister tried it for a little bit, but not during then. She started training probably only like 3 years ago, and she did it for a little bit. But again, it just kind of me and my one of my little brothers are basically the ones that stuck with it, and he's a purple belt now.
That's nice.
And can we go back to the point where you went to the ADCC trials in 2017 as a blue belt and you won it?
Yeah.
Like, talk to us through that. Like, what was that like? You won it. Like,
So what's funny, that competition, I didn't even want to do it. I was like, I hate no-gi. I don't want to do this. I hated no-gi.
You said you hate no-gi. Yeah.
Not now, but then. I hated it. So I went and I had just not even in the last year, like in the last 6 months, I just switched gyms, and my professor, he's there and he's like, hey, we're going to take a team down to ADCC trials. Like, I think you should do it. And I was like, I hate no-gi, blah, blah, blah. Fine, I'll do it, whatever. It never, even if I didn't like it, like it didn't take much to convince me. If you wanted me to go compete, I would go compete. And so when I signed up for the heavier division, because I had to be like 145 and it's 132. And I was like, I'm like 16. I was like, I'm not cutting down. That's like 12 pounds. I don't want to cut down to that. So I signed up for the heavier one. And I was like, because I don't really like, whatever. I'm just going to compete. I'm a blue belt in 16. The likelihood of me winning, it's like super low. Maybe I'll podium. Why am I going to go cut all this weight? So I signed up for that. And then he's like, you know, I really don't think you should do the heavier one. You should cut down. I was like, I hate you. I'll cut down. And this has got to be in like December or something. And I think the tournament was in like February or April. And like for guys, they can start cutting a month before and you'll make that weight fine. But I feel like for women, especially like being a kid, like I was still growing and everything. I had to start cutting for like a long time for my body to even make it down. And I was still competing. Like I still did the IBJJF Pans that year. So I remember, like, I stayed in my normal weight class, but I weighed in at like 138, and I was like, okay, I'm good. Like, I've got a month. I'll cut the extra 6 pounds. Perfect. I'll make the weight, no problem. And then I remember flying down, like, I was heavy. My body just hit a point and it was like done. And I was tracking everything. I was weighing everything. And I was like, what is going on? And so, like, I had to cut a ton of, like, I think I ended up cutting over 6 pounds of water weight. And I woke up and I was still a pound heavy. When I went to sleep, I was still a pound heavy. So I woke up, and by some miracle, I made the weight. Like, I woke up right on the dot. And they let me weigh in early because the girls were supposed to weigh in later, but they let me weigh in earlier with the guys. So I went, like, I weighed in, and I remember being there. And if you watch one of my matches, now that I look back at it, I wasn't losing it as bad as I thought. But, like, in that moment, I thought I was losing it, like, really bad. And I remember being there and, like, in a bad spot. And I was like, no, I was like, I literally starved myself for the last, like, 3 days. I starved myself for months before that, but, like, literally starved for, like, the last 3 days, eating, like, 2 egg whites. I was like, screw this shit. I am not losing. I'm getting. And I remember, like, I went from a bad position. I came up, I swept, I passed, and I came up, and I was like, I am not losing this. I was like, I have basically died to get to this point. And I, like, went, and I think that was, like, the semifinals. And I remember, like, I won that match, went through, and then, like, it clicked in, and I was like, oh, holy shit. I was like, I'm in the finals right now. And I remember before I went in, I was like, you know, like, I remember telling people, I was like, yeah, if I do super well, like, maybe I'll podium. And I remember getting there, and then I was like, oh, shit, like, I'm in the finals. And then I won it, and I was like, oh, shit. I I'm going to ADCC. I was 16, a blue belt. And it was even more of a big deal because the previous coach that I had literally told me I shouldn't even try to compete at the trials till I was at least a purple belt in 19 because it would be a waste of my time and I would just get hurt. And I remember winning it and being like, ha.
I hope you took pictures.
Oh, I just so many pictures, posted it. And I just remember, like, calling my mom and being like, ha, isn't this funny? I was like, he can suck it.
Oops, accidentally sent that to you. Sorry, that was someone else.
Yeah, that was it. Oops, sorry, it was not on purpose.
You spoke about weight cutting. Have you had to do that a lot in your career? And did it affect you in any way? As in, because we all, like, for me, for example, I always associated the weight number with myself. Mm-hmm. So now that I'm bigger, I'm like, holy shit, that's not me. Who is this? And it becomes a little bit of identity issue. Have you had that or your children?
Oh, no, 100%. I remember especially after. So I was cutting basically that entire year, even after I won the trials, to try to make the weight for ADCC, because they don't tell you until after. And I think it's more well known now, but then, like, they don't tell you until after you make it and a couple months before that you have to weigh in 3 days in a row. And they've slightly changed it now, where they'll give you an allowance sometimes. But at that point in time, they didn't give you an allowance at all. You had to make the weight Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And for anyone that even cuts, like, even 5-10 pounds, like, making a weight 3 days in a row changes it completely with how you have to make the weight. And so I was, like, dieting down this whole time, and I ended up, I think it's a big reason why I got hurt is because I was dieting down so much. If you look back at pictures, like, I was so skinny, and I'm like, I was still had, like, baby fat, but you could tell I'd, like, it was only because of my age, but you could see everything that I could have lost, like, was gone. And I remember afterwards, like, after I got hurt and, like, I couldn't train and I was basically just lifting, and I was like, of course, I went from, like, this major calorie deficit to eating normal, and, like, I put on weight, and now I look back at pictures and it wasn't anything crazy. My weight didn't get anything crazy, but, like, I got, for me, I was super heavy, and I remember being there and being like feeling horrible, and it took years to come out of it to be able to not feel that way and to have it where I was like, I felt like I wasn't a real athlete. Like, even though I was winning stuff, I was like, I'm not a real athlete because I don't look like a real athlete. Like, I don't, that type of thing. And I don't think a lot of people realize how much goes into that. And that's, or, like, they think it's just them or whatever. But, like, you have that feeling, especially at that point in time. I feel like a lot of the really, really good girls were tiny. Like they're
ripped.
Yeah, or completely ripped, like 8-pack jack, and like I didn't look anything like that. The only time I looked like that when I was cutting crazy down, even then, for how much I was cutting down, I wasn't that jacked. And I trained with all guys, and I still do for the most part, but it doesn't bother me as much now. But I remember like I trained with all guys, and I was like, dude, I train more than you. I eat better, doing all this. What the hell? You're jacked, and you're over there like got the barbecue sauce on your stuff, and you're like, oh, I'm cutting so much weight. I'm like, you're not even cutting. It doesn't count as cutting. But I remember like that being a thing, and it took me a long time to come to terms with being like, yeah, I was heavier. And what's funny is when I did, I actually lost, like last year I lost a ton of weight. Not even like, I didn't change anything. I don't know if it was just kind of like, wasn't, you know, 19, 20 anymore. It just kind of hit, you know, 21, 22, and I kind of lost a lot of weight. I ended up having to kind of drop down a weight class just because of that. But there was definitely that, like, especially from cutting a lot to then like was hurt and put on weight, was definitely that. I was there. I was like, I'm not an athlete. I'm super heavy. I remember I wasn't even back competing yet, and I was already dieting down because of that.
Wow.
That's hard.
But you say that you've come out of that.
Yeah.
Was that a process of time, or what sort of helped you move beyond that?
It was, I think, basically just time, and then just trying to like, also I like after cutting all of that, for so long, it's different when you're not cutting for a long time to like hit a weight and bounce back, but that's not what I was doing. I was cutting for a really long time, and I think it also took time for my body in itself, not only like mentally for me to come to it, but like my body to actually come to it and like be able to actually eat more food and not putting on weight with it, and just kind of getting used to everything again, and like basically healing my body from all the damage I'd done, and then the mind, and then just kind of I really just think it was a time thing, and it took a long time to get there, probably a couple years at least. And it didn't help that when I was younger, like I had an eating disorder, like I had a problem where like I wasn't eating and I was working out like 10 hours a day and stuff like that. So then cutting to that, I think that's constantly, like, I think most girls go through that. So then it's a juggle when you get to the point that sometimes you do need to cut, to be at the weight class you should be or whatever, but juggling it to where you're cutting for the sport and not because the food's bad and that type of thing.
Yeah, totally. So going on to like more recent times, what's a normal day of training like for you? So you were saying before, I thought it was so interesting, you said you weren't getting enough training before. What does a normal day of training look like for you? And do you train 7 days a week?
I don't. Unfortunately, they don't have training on the weekends. If I want to get more training in. I end up training with my fiance on like Saturdays, and I'll take Sunday off if we want to get more in, or like I'll lift. But I train at least the 5 days a week, twice a day within that. And then I lift 3 days a week on top of everything else. And then that doesn't include, like, let's say on a Friday I've already trained, but I don't feel like I got enough out of it, or I just want to do extra. We'll set a timer, and usually probably like 10-minute rounds, do like 4 or 5 10-minute rounds, just to get extra training in, because that's always a thing that I feel like I struggle with, is not getting enough training in.
Mm.
So when you say double every day, do you mean full sparring?
Yeah. Nice. So my competition training is more in the mornings. That's when all the black belts are there. The night training is more so more your hobby. It's like, not that there aren't upper belts. Like we still have, you know, brown, black belt, purple belt, all of that. But more of my competition training is in the morning. So that's when most of the black belts are there. And then I go through same, like full thing, drilling, rolling, and then same thing at night.
Mm. And when you say you don't feel like you get enough training in, is that because you feel like you haven't, practiced something enough, or you're not getting a feeling of progression? Like, what's that feeling?
I just feel like I'm not tired enough.
Okay. But hold on, with some training, have you ever, like, has your body ever said, please help, like, please help? you know? Like, do you feel dead?
Especially when I was training, not so much now, but when I was training, like, for ADCC trials and stuff, I would get there at 10. I would roll for 2 hours. Then I would do the noon class, and I didn't roll at the noon class. And then I would go lift, and then I would come back, and then I would teach the kids. And then I would do the Muay Thai, and then I would do – just for extra cardio. Then I would do the night class, and then I would do the competition class. And I trained 7 days a week during that time too.
Yeah.
But that was my crazy day. My shorter days were, I would just train the twice a day. So I would train, three, I guess, get there at 10, roll for like 2 hours, do the noon class, but I didn't roll at the noon class. It was just drilling. Mm-hmm. And then I would come back and then I would train at night, and that would be a full training session with rolling and everything. I think there's constantly finding that balance of doing that, which it worked for then. Don't get me wrong. Like I progressed an insane amount. But I was also, 16, 17, and definitely put some miles on my body too, doing that. Like that was, it's a lot. So there's constantly that like back and forth of like, doing that, which honestly is probably a little bit too much. And then also the other where I think you kind of have, but also being an athlete, I think you have that internal dialogue that it's like, let's go more, 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 more. And I think that's what keeps you at the high level, but you also have to manage it with, does my body need rest or not?
Yeah. It's very tricky. I mean, do you ever find, because this is your job, this is something which you've given so much to, do you find that in itself is pressure to then, you're like, this is my job, I have to do it? Or do you find that that doesn't come into it at all?
I definitely think not more so with the training. I think that's more so just pressure I put on myself, just that I have. But I definitely feel it like when I'm in the training, if I'm not doing well, I don't think a lot of people that don't do this like competitively or as a career, I think you always get that like, oh, you're so lucky. I wish I could just train all the time. And it's like, yeah, but like my training is different than yours. Even if we're in the same training, how I look at it is different than how you look at it. Like somebody passed your guard and you're like, ah, dang, somebody passed my guard. That sucks. Somebody passes my guard and I go, shit, I have a huge competition coming up. That can't happen.
Mm.
And like, I just lost right there or stuff like that. So it's more so that like in the training, it changes how you look at it versus like, yeah, I put pressure on myself. I feel like overall just to keep the level up, but that's just, if anybody knows me, that's just my personality. But I like in the training, it changes how you look at it. If you look like, I think if you ask any competitor, like it changes it when you're in the training that you're like, yeah, it's different. Like you had a bad day and everybody has bad days. However, it's different when I have those bad days, cause I look at it and I go, well, what if that happens on a competition day? Like I still can't let that happen just because I'm having a bad day. I still have to be better than that, even on my bad days. And I think that's the biggest
thing. Wow. That shows your mentality. Can we talk about your mentality? What, like, first of all, were you always like this? Were you always competitive? Putting pressure to yourself, how do you manage that? And how have you been managing it since a very young age? Let's start with that.
Yeah, I've definitely always been like that as a child. I was the kid that if I didn't score 100%, like I'd be doing my homework. If I didn't get 100%, I would sit there and like cry, and then I would erase the whole thing and do it again. And I was very severe dyslexia. So I would mess things up, and it wasn't even because I had the answer wrong. I just wrote it backwards, and I would still do the same thing. It wasn't 100%. Erase the entire thing. And I remember my mom being like, it's okay, you need to, it's not a big deal, you still got an A. Like, I don't care, erase the entire thing. And I would go back and redo the whole thing. So it's always been like that from like, if you ask my mom, she's like, before you even born you were like that. She's like, I was pregnant with you when you were like that. So
I can feel it.
So it's just always been like that. And I think if anything, it's been one of those things that I've had to actually learn to be like, hey, it's okay. You can be a little bit nicer. It's okay that you're not, training right now. You can relax. And it's just always kind of been like that. But I think that's also what's helped me get to where I'm at. And also, I think you see a lot of kids that start training at a young age, like they experience a lot of burnout, but I think that's because it's not coming from them. It's coming from parents, or like a little bit's them, but something else, or it isn't, or they're looking, I don't know, validation or something like that. And I think a lot of it was just because how I've always been, like, I've always wanted to be whatever I did. Didn't matter what it was. Didn't even have to be sports. If I was going to do it, I was going to be the very best. And like, we don't even play Monopoly in my house, because it would get to the point my older siblings would be like, if you don't sell me that property, I won't drive you to practice. That's not fair. And so it was not just me. My entire family's kind of like that, but especially me, which I've always just been like that. And then with the mentality, it's a hard one, because you're constantly adjusting and constantly learning. And I think for anybody that like wants to work on it, if you're wanting to, like, there's always like little motivational clips that you can listen to, or there's a lot of good books out there. Just find one that you like, and, you know, just kind of start reading it and working on it, I feel like.
I mean, so with the mentality, like, how do you feel nervous around a big show, or like a big show like ADCC or an invitational? Like, how do you work with your nerves? Do you get them? And how do you psychologically prepare? And can you talk us through how this used to be and has this changed?
Oh, definitely get nerves still. When people say they don't, I don't know how that happens. It's definitely gotten better for me with how I deal with them. It used to be bad. Like, I used to not sleep for like a week before any competition. Like a full, I would get down there and I would sleep like a couple hours, and then like 3 days before I wouldn't sleep at all. So I would get like exhausted competing, and now, you know, I still get the same nerves, but I think just with how I've like worked through it, like, this is for me, I think the biggest thing, like, I know if I have the nerves, like, it's good. It means that I'm there. It means that I care and that I'm ready. If I didn't have the nerves, then I'm not at the point that I should be. I don't care enough and that type of stuff. So I just look at it as that, instead of it being like, oh man, I'm so nervous. My God, I'm so nervous. Just, yeah, this is normal. This is how it feels competing. This is how it goes. I can sleep right before, literally, like, put my head down, I'll be sleeping. I've had some that I've, like, super fights, not competition so much, super fights, I've literally woken up with the match before me going and then gone to fight. And it's not because I don't have nerves. I think people see that and they think, like, oh, you're not nervous at all. And it's not. It's just that I know that the nerves are normal. The nerves mean that I care. The adrenaline's there. It's not a bad thing. And I think a lot of people feel it and they start getting like, they're not used to feeling it. So you start fighting it. And when you start fighting it, like, it just gets worse. It's an adrenaline dump. And the adrenaline's not bad. The adrenaline's good. You want that feeling. You want the butterflies, all of that. Just look at it like it's just another part of the competition. And I think when you start looking at it like that and you're like, yep, this is just it. I have the good feeling. Good. It means I care. Okay. Let's go and compete. Everything we've been doing. And that type of thing, instead of looking at, I think a lot of people, you find them when they feel the nerves, like, oh, this isn't good. And it's the nerves aren't a bad thing. It's just a part of the competition.
You couldn't have said it better.
No, you made me excited. Like, going, I'm like, oh.
Because we did have this conversation with Shanti, but that explanation is the best.
Yeah. Yeah. You've I mean, seasoned competitor over there.
Yeah.
She knows what she's talking about.
I mean, one question, because with every athlete, we are accustomed to see how well they train jiu-jitsu, how well they lift, how, and all of that. But nobody talks about do you do any work with the mental, like the mental aspect? Is that any, does that need any work, any training?
I listen to stuff all the time. It's usually like shorter clips, some motivational stuff. You'll see it occasionally, like, the audios I'll post on some of my reels, I'll actually listen to those full things. Like, they're in my playlist. And like, I have that, I have some normal music in there, but I definitely have, like, I have those and I'll listen to a lot of those on, like, when I'm competing, when I'm in the bullpen. It's not always music that's playing. Sometimes it's that's playing to get there, to just, you know, put myself in the right headspace if I feel like I need it, or sometimes I want it. And it varies. Sometimes, like, I don't want to listen to it. And I just want to listen to music. And sometimes I don't want to listen to music and I just listen to that. So it just kind of goes back and forth. But I definitely think that it's something that most people need to work on. I think a lot of times you'll see there's a lot of really, really talented people out there that just don't compete well. And if you're not competing well, probably not the physical side of it. It's probably in your head. And the thing is, all of that affects you physically. Your mentality affects it. The adrenaline affects it. How you deal with the adrenaline affects it. You always hear it, like, your body will do way more than you think it will if your mind will push it. And, like, I think it's said a lot. But there's a lot of validity to it if you, you know, work the mental side of it and have that to push. Everybody, once you get to the high level, everybody's good. Everybody's strong. Everyone's in shape. The question is also, you know, timing, who has the better strategy, whose head is in it more that day, and all of that stuff is really what comes to affect the outcome.
Is there any way that you sort of work? So when you start fighting, are you someone who gets completely absorbed in the fight and nothing else enters your mind? Or are you sort of aware that you're being watched, that you're aware that you're on stage? Like, how, because there's this sort of, people talk about a flow state, which is the ideal space to enter. So it's do you enter that? How, what's that like for you?
A lot of times, yes. But sometimes I have a little bit of ADHD. I go the opposite way where I'll start thinking about random stuff sometimes, which isn't good. I've had it. This is going to be so bad. I was competing Nogi Pans, not this last one, but the one before. And it was a stupid bikini I was looking at on Shein before. And I was like, oh, I should buy it in this color. And I'm in the middle of, like, a competition, and I'm going through and I'm like, what the hell is going on? I'm in the middle of competing. I'm an idiot. And, like, then, like, I snap back in and I'm good and I'm going through everything else. And it's different. Like, it also depends on, like, who I'm competing against and how that that level is working out. Obviously, that's not happening when I'm fighting, you know, finals of worlds or stuff like that. But it sometimes, if not, my brain tends to drift a little bit. But for the most part, when I'm having, like, those really, really high-level matches, I am in that, like, flow state. Everything's on the match. I'm focused on that. I can definitely hear the other person, the other person's corner. I hear my coach. And then I kind of use both to actually go back and forth to see what I'm then doing.
Wow. Elizabeth, do you study your opponents? Do you, like, before, two questions. So if you're in a tournament, will you see who you're fighting against? And if you're in a show, will you study your opponent?
Usually I'll have my fiance or my coach do it, because then I'll be like, because I don't feel like I can look at it from a non-biased standpoint. I feel like it's easy to look at it and be like, oh, they're super, super good. They're really, really good at this. Or you do the opposite where you're like, they're not good at this, they're not good at that, whatever. And so for the most part, like, I'll have someone else look at it and I'll be like, hey, if there's something you think that I should, like, really pay attention for, just let me know that, just so that so it's in the back of my head. Other than that, I don't look too much. If, like, for a tournament, I'll look to see who I'm fighting, mainly just to see how the bracket's working out and where I'm seated. Usually it's not, like, the day before, maybe 2 days before. Just look at it. I might look them up just to see if I recognize a face, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you use social media on the day or before?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You would. Okay. Fantastic.
So what is, like, the weirdest thing that's ever, you as a woman, you've experienced in jiu-jitsu?
Oh, man.
I'm scared of what's gonna come.
Honestly, I don't have that many bad things, like, as far as in training goes, but I've had people before, like, as I'm walking, like, I've had guys, like, grab me and yank me back and be like, hey, can I get a picture? It is, and, like, this isn't stuff that happens, like, often, right? But it happens. I remember one time I have friends that they're like, I refuse to walk around with you at tournaments because it's just annoying. But I was walking at Pans one time and, like, yeah, I'm getting stopped, taking pictures, whatever. But normally, like, people are, like, are very respectful or whatever. But I've had guys before, like, grab my arm and, like, yank me back. And for me, it kind of catches me off guard, especially, like, not that it should be happening in anyone, but like, I'm not one of like the really small, like rooster weight or like light feather girls. Like, I don't feel like you shouldn't be doing it to anyone, but I don't feel like you look at me and you're like, that's the one I'm going to grab and yank back to ask for a picture. But like, I've had it happen. Like, guys yank me back and then, can I get a picture? Like, yeah, sure, bro. I don't know why you couldn't just like ask like a normal person. And I think the normal, like you're training and people go hella hard as usual, but I don't have too many crazy things happen now. I did when I was younger, I had this one and I was rolling and like, you know, from training with women, like sometimes, especially in Nogi, like you'll slip up and I'm sorry, but if I slip up to your boobs and it's posted there, it's better than me getting like my posture broken down. But we're in the gi, and I remember this guy, like, my gi was open, so his hands were there, and I was like, oh, whatever, like, you're using it as a grip. And I, like, closed my gi so he could, like, grab the gi. He opened the gi and went back, and I, like, closed the gi and went back. He opened the gi and went, I was like, I'm going to kill this kid. And he had to have been, like, a little bit older than me, but nothing crazy, but I was like, I'm going to kill this kid. I'm going to kill you. I was nice and, like, fix my gi and like everything. And I'm not one that like, I think about, like, I grew up with brothers and that type of thing. So like half the time stuff probably happens and it just kind of like goes over my head. Cause I'm not even, my mind isn't even there, but I remember this happening and like I beat the shit out of this kid afterwards. But I was like, dude, come on.
Did you tell him or did you just beat
him up? I just beat him up.
Okay, cool.
And then I was like, you're good.
That's another way.
Yeah, no.
That's another way of saying.
It's a legit way. It's a legit way.
But like, nothing too crazy happens to me anymore as far as that goes, surprisingly.
You did say that people would go super hard. Yeah. And in my head, people know who you are, your black belt. So are they trying to prove, like, and also how do you deal with that? Like, have you had like a weird, all right, you're prepping for a comp and in training you have someone like going spastic, what do you do?
Yeah, so I just thought of one. So I just went, I think it was one of the fight to wins or whatever, but I just won a belt, right? And I came back to train and there was this blue belt that came in to visit and I was teaching the class and it was like a smaller class. It's like, okay, I'll train with him. And we're training, and he, like, jokingly says in the middle of it, he's like, haha, if I beat you, does that mean I get your belt? I was like,
I'd like to see you try.
Yeah, I remember, like, in the middle of it, like, not stopping the roll, but, like, me stopping and thinking to myself, and I was like, I'm about to kill this guy. But I'm about to, and, like, after, like, meeting the guy, he was just trying to make, like, a joke or whatever, but I was like, dude, you would never say that to, like, one of the guys.
Exactly.
You would never say that shit to one of the guys.
That's so true.
That's the difference. They would be like, oh, I meant it's a joke. And you're like, yeah, but.
Like, yeah, exactly. But would you have said that to, like, one of the guys? And the answer is no. Now, do they go hella hard on the guys? Yeah, that still happens. That happens all the time. And I think that's something you just kind of learn to expect, especially, like, I understand it from the other side of it. A lot of times it isn't even like they think, oh, if I beat you, like I'm going to get this belt or I'm at this level. I think a lot of times in their head, the thought process is like, if I do really well against you, like you're going to be impressed with me is what it has to do with. I really don't. And not that there aren't some of the guys or some of the people, because I've had girls, same thing, go super hard with me, people in general. But I think a lot of it is like, they're not actually trying to beat you as much as they're like, look, I'm good. I'm doing good. You should be impressed with me.
Yeah.
And so like from that side of it, like I just know when I go to train for the most part, people are going to go really, really hard. Like when I'm out teaching seminars and like I train with everyone. And so like I'm just aware when I do that, that people are going to go hard. And if I'm hurt, then I just don't train because I don't expect them not to, because I don't think, for the most part, I don't think it comes from a bad place. I think most of the time it's just like they're actually trying to show, like, look what I know, look how I can do this. It doesn't actually come from a bad place. So you just kind of get used to it and deal with it from there. And then I've been dealing with that since I was like since I won the trials, since I was a blue belt. remember the first time it happened, it was like a month after, I'd just broken my ankle the week before, and I went and I still did this super fight. And like my ankle was messed up. And I was like, oh, it was my friend's gym. I was like, hey, I'm just going to go in. I just want to drill a little bit, sweat a little bit. Like, I'm not even going to train. And I remember, like, I walked in, and the first thing someone says, like, hey, aren't you that 16-year-old that just won the trials? And I was like, shit, it's going to be one of those days. And, like, it was. It proceeded to literally, and it wasn't even the lower belt. I literally, there were two black belts, and I proceeded to roll over, like, 40 minutes after the class ended, going back and forth between these two black belts that are both bigger than me, that I'm cutting down. I'm like maybe 140 pounds, maybe lighter, a blue belt. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be my life. And like, that's just, and it, I still don't think it comes from a bad place most of the time. And so you just kind of learn to expect it and deal with it. And if you don't want to deal with it, it's not going to go train somewhere that I don't know then.
It sounds like you've got a really like grounded attitude. You know, I think you're so right. Like, it, I think most of the time people are just trying to sort of see how they do when they're really trying against a really elite level athlete, an elite level fighter. But it's, you've got a lot of compassion, which is really, really cool. Have you always felt supported and seen throughout your career, like by family and friends and coaches and all of that?
My family's always been incredibly supportive, especially like my mom, my dad too, but especially my mom, just always being the one being there, moving for me to have training multiple times. And, you know, her being okay with, you know, me at 16, like I moved away for the first time by myself, and like she later moved up, but I was, you know, 16, a couple months away, moved away again at 18, moved away again at 19, almost 20, like, you know, just always been very supportive with that. Kind of what I touched on earlier with some of like friends and training partners, what I dealt with really early on was people being like, you're going to burn out, you need to not do that, you're training too much. But I also know like it wasn't coming from a bad place. It really wasn't being worried about like burning out and stuff like that. So it's kind of one of those things you have to juggle, like, because sometimes people, luckily I haven't dealt with it too much. I have a little bit, but not with people actually like not wanting me to succeed. But you kind of have to look at it like, where is it coming from? Is it coming from them actually caring, or is it coming from them being jealous, or like, because you deal with that. But for the most part, I've been very lucky that most of the people in my life have always been very supportive of my career.
Have you ever had to deal with toxic people, and how did you deal with that?
I don't talk about it a lot, but my first coach wasn't, there's a reason I, you know, left there after I did. It wasn't the best situation where I was at. I trained there, you know, from 12 to almost 16, and I think it's kind of one of those things, like, they get excited when they're building you up, and then kind of get jealous when they start seeing like winning pans, I won worlds, and then after that, like, everything kind of like fell apart. And the fact that I think it was just kind of those things that like other people in the gym started like asking questions and stuff like that, and then the attention wasn't on them, and so it's just kind of like a jealousy thing is what I would assume. And you know, as hard as it was when I was younger when this happened, I look at it now and it's a blessing that it fell apart when it did, because I probably wouldn't have left, and it was not a good place for me to be in. So at the end of the day, like, I'm thankful that it happened when it did, and that it fell apart as badly as it did, because it meant I had to leave, which I probably wouldn't have otherwise. And I ended up, you know, in a much better place. That's how I became Aries. You know, I went and ended up training up in Anchorage, which they have an Aries affiliate, and became Aries, and it's kind of, you know, slingshotted my career to where I'm at now.
Yeah. It's amazing how life events can sort of guide you in a way that you wouldn't have been able to know, and you're like, oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah.
So you've been in a lot of grappling events. What's the pay like for men and women? How does that fare? And
I'm going to be honest. I think that's one of the things that doesn't get talked about that much. If you ask a lot of people, you don't know how much someone gets paid. You just kind of, you're like, like, I know how much some of the people get paid and like some of the guys that'll get paid, and they get paid like way more than I'm making. But then I also know the opposite, where I've heard of some of the guys and I'm like, how do you take that much? But the thing is, it doesn't get talked about that much. So I think it makes it hard, for negotiating, because I'm sure what I get paid is very different than even what one of the other girls gets paid, could be way different. One of the guys could probably get paid way less than me. And then another one of even a very similar level gets paid, you know, 10 times the amount. I think that's one of the, honestly, I think that's one of the biggest problems in jiu-jitsu, is like, it's not talked about. Seminar cost isn't talked about. Private lesson cost isn't talked about. Fight cost isn't talked about. A lot of that stuff, it's not talked about. And coming up, it makes it extremely hard to know what to ask for, as far as all of that goes. Now, you obviously know when it's a tournament and then they post how much is paid. But what people don't realize is some of those athletes are getting paid to show and other ones aren't. I know athletes that have showed up for tournaments. We're not going to name which ones, but let's say it's a tournament for $10,000 and only the person that wins gets $10,000. But what they don't realize is at least one of those athletes got paid, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 just to show.
Wow.
And really? It's not even the top athlete in the division. Now, I can't tell you if that top athlete got paid either. I don't know. I don't know if every person got paid to show or if just they got paid to show. But I know that person got paid to show, you know, was paid like $5,000 just to show. And that's one of the things that, like, it isn't talked about at all in jiu-jitsu. Like, you don't know what the other person makes unless you're friends.
God.
And that makes everything harder. Yeah, it makes. Because then how would you know what to
ask for, what they should be paying for? Not even, like, what am I asking for me? Do I have you cover – obviously, you're going to cover my flight and my hotel. Well, do I have you cover a coach's flight and a training partner's flight? Do you not? Do they cover their own? Do I take it out of my show? And the thing is that stuff isn't – it's not talked about at all. And it isn't just – yes, there's a pay discrepancy between the men and the women, but there's also a huge discrepancy within, like, just the men's. I can – like, from having that, there's a huge, like, between who's getting paid what. And, like, you don't know. You just kind of go – well, they're the top athlete. I'm assuming they're making this much, especially because they're from a good gym, and you assume their coach knows how to negotiate it. You don't know. And I think that's one of the biggest problems in jiu-jitsu, is the fact that, like, pay's not talked about.
Yeah. And do you like, because you just said that the coach is often negotiating. Is that quite normal for a coach to do? If you're very young, I would assume that would be. But as an adult competitor, is that something that's quite common for your coach instead of you to?
I think it depends on what gym you're at and also the relationship you have with your coach, but I think especially it varies with the gym. Like, I do all my negotiations basically by myself. But I think it varies a lot between what gym you're at and who your coach is.
God, it's like a minefield.
Yeah, right. Why is it important for grappling shows to actively support women?
I think the biggest thing is just, instead of it, I'm going to be the person that I might step on some toes. I think it can be an issue when you overly push just supporting women. And I purely because you run into the opposite, and it almost ends up being like a token women's thing. Like, oh, well, we have to have this on there. Because we have to have women on there, we're going to get in trouble. And you see that. And it shouldn't be that. It should be, hey, this person looks good. This fight looks good. That fight looks good. This fight looks good. That fight looks good. Here's where they are and how it is. Here's how they should be getting paid. Again, there should be men and women on both of it. But I think you can run into a little bit of a problem where you'll kind of get, they'll run their whole card and then they look at it and they go, shit, we don't have any women. That one. And it's not actually, it's an afterthought. It's not actually something they wanted on there. And looking at a card, you can tell. when they do that and when it's not. And I think the fights, what matches there are should be put on because they're going to be good matches and it should be on there, not because, hey, we wanted to run a men's, I don't know, 155 and this men's super fight and that men's super fight. And then we look at it and we go, when we post this, we're going to get shit online. Where's a random, where's the easiest women's fight we can get on that's going to be, and not actually, what's the best thing? And like, it's hard to navigate it because, you know, it, that's going to come from their intention. And the thing is, you can't really change someone's intention, no matter how much, like, you want to sit there and, argue it. Like, you can't change what someone's intention is with doing it. I think it's important to kind of get the women's out there. But the problem is, if you think of women's matches as just like an afterthought with it, it's going to be harder. Like, if we're not making as much money, then we can't train as much. If we can't train as much, the matches aren't going to be as good. It runs this whole, it's a snowball effect that you run into. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing. Like, if you have a big pay difference, and one thing that I like, AJP actually does it. One thing that I like is how they run who gets paid what. It's by the number of people in the bracket, and it's by belt. Perfect. Run it that way. So if I happen to be making, you know, there are less people in the division, I'm making less than the same weight class in the men's, but they had triple the amount of people. That's fair. I like with something like that because it makes it an even thing across the board. I don't need to be there's five people in my division. I don't need to be getting the same amount that somebody has 30 people in their division. They have way more fights. They're paying to sign up, so there's more money into it. And that side of it, that's okay that I've been making less because it's on an even playing field. If they had five people in there, we'd be making the same. It makes it even where, okay, like that encourages more people to sign up. It encourages more of that type of thing. And I prefer that to, I think, not so much in jiu-jitsu, but you run it in other sports where the women's side of it is getting paid less either overall, and maybe they're pulling in more or as much, or you have the women where they're arguing and they're like, and they're just doing less, but they're arguing to get paid the exact same amount. Whereas if you look at it at a percentage wise, their percentage has actually been higher than the men's. I like when it's something that's more like, hey, there's this many people in there. This is how much you get paid because of that. And it's the same. It doesn't vary men versus women. It's just how many people are in the bracket. Perfect. That's great. But go ahead. Sorry.
No. I was just thinking, because what would be your sort of just, I mean, obviously not, you know, this isn't concrete and not going to hold you to this, but like just thinking about it, like how would you see women's jiu-jitsu increasing and getting more sort of like equal pay or sort of more opportunities to have a platform to perform? Like, how do you see that happening? Is there anything that you would change?
We need to have where the weight classes are more solid. You see a lot of times where you'll have it, stuff that would never happen in the men's, right? There's this huge weight difference with them fighting, which if you label it an absolute, that's fine. Then you can have them fight. That's great. It's an absolute now. That's the whole point of an absolute. But you can't, you'll see women that are fighting two weight classes up than what they are, and for what's supposed to be something, and it isn't that. You would never see that in the men's. You're not going to see a middleweight fighting, you know, up in medium, you know, heavyweight or something like that, unless it's an absolute. Then you would see it. And I think just stuff like that, that would never happen in the men's. It shouldn't be happening in the women's. We shouldn't be having only two weight classes. For some of them, like that's not how it should be. We have more weight classes. Okay, let's say I end up fighting the same person, but it's in the absolute that I would have anyway. That's different. I signed up for an absolute. That's what I signed up for. But I think when you have those things that, you know, as much as I love ADCC, like you have two weight classes and the guys have way more, it's not going to have the same, it's not as professional when you only have two weight classes. And two weight classes and we don't even get an absolute. So we don't even have the opportunity to make the same amount of money. And just stuff like that, that you're looking at it. Well, the women, well, the thing is, if you keep looking at it like that, like it's going to stay like that. How many girls aren't going to fight even the 132? Like that 132 division is huge for rooster weights or for even your light featherweights. Like, that's huge. Why are those girls going to fight when they're fighting someone like the Mosquito? Or you look at that, like, there's a huge weight difference. But she cuts all the way down to make that. And there's nothing wrong with that. She should be, because fighting the over is crazy. Then you run into something. And the thing is, if you lower the weight class and those girls that are still fighting there decide to cut down, then they cut down, they made the weight. That's fine. That's how it is for the guys too. You'll still get guys that are huge for that division, but they cut down and made the weight. But the problem you run into is it looks like how men's jiu-jitsu did, what, 20 years ago? When that was happening, like, you're not going to look at it the same way when it's like that. It's just not, it's unprofessional.
I think that's it.
Absolutely.
I totally agree. But moving on to Polaris, who are you most excited to fight? If there is anyone in particular, I don't know.
I would be excited to fight Fionn. You know, that's someone that we're similar weight classes. I think she fights light normally and I fight middle, so there's a weight class difference. But because of that, like, we've never fought or anything like that. I think that would be a fun one. And one that kind of just been looking at, if it happens, great. If it doesn't, you know, kind of whatever. But I think overall the matches are just going to be good. It's going to be interesting because you have Amy Campbell in there, Giamana, who are heavier weight classes that are cutting down. And then you have like Brand St. Marie and Fionn that are smaller coming up. So I think it's just going to be interesting to see how that ends up working out with it.
Definitely. Yeah, that will be so exciting. As I'm thinking, there's going to be a moment of stalling in that the whole thing is going to be fire.
Well, if you look
fire,
at the
fire,
rules, like, you can't stall either. It's not like other ones. Like, you really can't stall in Polaris with how the rules are.
You fought Amy Campo before. What was that like? And do you know what you're going to be expecting? Because you fought, I've heard you in an interview saying that you fought since juvenile. Is it like, are you going in and saying, I know what she's going to do. Oh, I know that. Is that how it is? Or does it change every time?
So she had, her game is always like, it's been consistent, but at the same time, like, you always have to look at it. You can't just expect the same thing because you know each other's game, well, great. But the thing is, she's probably been working on something. There's probably going to be, like, even if it's not a big thing, when it's, like, a small tweak, it makes a big difference at that level. So it's just kind of always being like, hey, yeah, we fought before, and, like, I know to look out for this, this, and this, but, like, I can't just focus on this, this, and this. Like, I have to look at the whole picture and everything the entire time, and I think that makes it, like, that always makes it interesting, having that.
Absolutely. And what are your future plans, 5-10 years?
5-10 years, hopefully still competing, because I'll still be, early 30s.
Yeah. Will you be, like, you know, making a gym? Are you, like, going to move, continue moving around? Are you settled?
I'll probably be somewhere else in 5 to 10 years where I have no idea. My fiance wants a gym, so possibly a gym, but that would be his thing, not mine. I still want to compete, want to be able to travel. So, you know, have that, probably be in a different place. But still the same thing, just competing and hopefully traveling and doing seminars and all that. Yes.
Living a good life. Yeah. Lovely. Shams, do you have another question? Lovely. Let's dive into the last question that we ask anyone that's on this podcast. What are you fighting for, Elizabeth Clay?
I'm sure everybody else has got an answer. I don't have an answer to that. Just the same thing, you know, proving everything that I have worked, you know, the last 11 years for, and hopefully being able to go out there and show some good jiu-jitsu.
You certainly are showing us really good jiu-jitsu. The best jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Thank you
so much. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Women Who Fight podcast. And credit to Will Grant for being our songwriter and sound editor. Please subscribe and share and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at womenwhofight.co.uk and check out our website for more content.